Er det et åbent spil, om nogen skal siges, at hvis der er pressefolk, der søger vise sig, at andre orkester til stede? YB om at respektere vores medlemmers personlige anonymitet, vi vil også gerne minde om, at ikke enkeltstående medlem er en udtalelse på vegne af en af. Hvis I ønsker nærmere information om narkotika anonymous, kan I eventuelt kontakte konventkomiteen. Hvis du er ny i en af, skal der være en særlig velkomst, så vi kun kan beholde det, vi har ved at give videre. Det koster ikke noget at være medlem. Du er medlem, hvis du siger, du er. Det eneste kræves, at vi ønsker om at stoppe med at bruge, men for at besøge vores fællesskab, vil vi bede om, at der ikke er medbringet stoffer eller værktøj på fællesskab. Så har vi en tradition for oplæsning for vores basistekst, derfor gerne bede Thomas fra Nordsjælland om at komme og læse til dig af det. Så vil jeg gerne bede Astrid fra Helsingør om at gå op og læse dag 1 af et program.
Tak.
det så være Møllerne fra København. Hej, jeg hedder Møllerne. Der er vi godt til en selskab, men vi kommer til, hvor vi kunne ikke leve, men vi er nødt til meget, men så godt. Vi er nødt til at have noget og andet at skrue, når vi havde fundet dette stoffer. Vi placerede brugen af dem og vores familier og kunders og mænds og børns selvfærd. Vi måtte have stoffer på hver plads. Vi gjorde mange mennesker at stå på sig, men mest af alle gjorde vi os selv på sig. På grund af vores mange evne til at acceptere personen ansvar, skabte vi i virkeligheden vores egne problemer. Vi synes, at være uden stand til at stå ansigt til ansigt med livet på deres egen betingelser. De fleste af os indså, at vi i vores addiktion, altså selvmord, med addiktionen er en snedig fjende, og at vi havde mistet fjende til at gøre noget ved. Mange af os endte i fængsel ved at søge hjælp gennem tid, gennem hjælp og psykiatri. En af de symptomer var tilfældig for os, vores sygdom dog altid op igen. Eller fortsætte med at bygge sig, indtil vi desperationen skal blive for til en anden linje. Vi indtog, at vi var syge mennesker, efter vi var kommet til en vi ville have en sygdom for et liv, der ikke er en kendt opfattelse, men kan også stoppe os på et bestemt. Så er det bedre nu. Det lyder som en stor opgave, og vi kan ikke gøre det helt på en dag. Vi kan ikke acceptere på en dag, så husk. Der er en ting mere, der er det, der kan besejre os i vores bedre. Det er en ligegyldig eller en slå ramt holdning til åndelige principper. Så er jeg lige til uretværdigt. Det viser, at vi er godt på vej. Vi finder, at vores fremgangsmåde over på sygdom, at ikke er fuldstændig realistisk. For den terapeutiske værdi er en ærlig, som hjælper en anden ærlig, er uden sin støtte. Vi føler, at vores måde praktisk, så en ærlig kan bedst forstå og hjælpe en anden ærlig. Vi tror på, at det hurtigere vi står ansigt til ansigt med vores daglige problemer i vores samfund, det hurtigere bliver en acceptabel, ansvarlig og produktiv medlemmer i vores samfund. Den eneste måde at undgå tilbagevendt til aktiv addiktion er at undlade sig det første stof. Du er som os, ved du. Er en af for mange, og tusind aldrig nok. Vi lægger stor vægt på det, for vi ved, at vi bruger stoffer, hvilken som helst slags, eller erstatter ikke noget andet, slipper i vores addiktion løs igen. At tænke på alkohol, som anderledes end andre stoffer,
fortsat tilbage på en hel del af os. Når vi kom til en af, så trak mange af os af alkohol, der er anderledes. Men vi er ikke god til at blive på det på. Alkohol er et stof. Ja. Vi er mennesker med sygdomme af disse, som må afstå fra alle stoffer for at opnå bedre.
Som en hovedet sikker, at blive introduceret af Sande Fritid fra København.
Copenhagen? Is it right to pronounce Copenhagen? Yeah. Hello, everybody. I'm Edith. My name is Olga, and I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm just. Let's see.
Hope you will understand my English, my poor English, I'm sorry. I really want to share you, to share with you our strength, hope, and recovery. And I, first of all, I really want to say thank you to the Copenhagen Convention Committee for invitation. To be here as a speaker. I really don't deserve it at all, but it is a big privilege for me to be here with you, and also a big responsibility. And I really hope my higher power will be with me and can say through me how we're struggling with our disease everywhere in our world, and that it is possible to recover everywhere, no matter what, even in Russia. Then I learned that my topic will be gratitude in service or through service. I was very happy about the word service, but don't happy about the gratitude. And I can explain why. Because about service, I can say a lot now. I do a lot of service. Last several years in our fellowship in Moscow, and I'm very proud of this doing and very care about it. But about gratitude, it's always was a concerning stuff for me. Because our disease is called also as a never enough. And for me as an addict, there is never enough for what I have in my life. And often I'm just sitting in my head and just thinking and sorry about what I have now in my life, rather than be grateful what I have in my life. And I have just incredible life, but I can't see it inside, you know. So the gratitude is every time the thing which I need to work on. I have right now I'm in the sponsor line, and we have such kind of task that we should. It's around the world service sponsors community, sponsor sponsee, and we should each day we should say gratitude, write down gratitude list and send it through a mail to the group. And sometimes I'm sitting and just can't create any thoughts what I should be grateful for, you know, because sometimes this is not very good. And I want to share with you my story a little bit and to say how I find gratitude through service. I hope I can say true and be honest with you. And I was born, you know, it's a fashion now in our Moscow fellowship to be preparing for speakers meeting, you know, and I have this list and I will just, you know, touch it so hard. I was born in Moscow, Russia, in a middle family, middle-class family. My father is a military man and mother is a teacher of Russian and literature at school. And from outside, our family was like very good-looking family. But how come from inside, my brother became an alcoholic and I became a drug addict in such a good family, you know. And I always felt myself under the total control of my mom and always under the power on her. And that time I didn't know that my grand-grandfather, my grandfather, my two cousins, my step-brother, and lots of relatives, in one word, died from alcoholism. I didn't know that. And right now I understand how much fear my father and my mother had about me and about my brothers. So my mother tried what she can, and I can't blame her. And my first big drink was at age of 15 and ended with a blackout. And even that, I remember that feelings of such a great fear, freedom and power which I had from my first drink. And at school I didn't drink a lot, of course, not every day, but almost all drink continued with blackouts. And at college, I entered college, and at college it started like every day. And I understood that I shouldn't drink, because how come alcohol influence on me in some different way than it influenced on others? because I was very aggressive, I fighting every time. I didn't remember what I did during the parties, and nobody actually wants to drink with me because it was dangerous. I lost all my good girlfriends. Even from the beginning, from my first year in college. And instinctively, I guess, I started to look for other substance, for other drugs to have high. And I started to use drugs with musicians and, you know, all this beginning company. I so enjoyed to be in this company, and we smoked a lot. And during the Soviet time, as some of you remember, you know, in the Soviet Union there is no sex, no drugs, no any bad things, you know, we just have like very good company, very close. But, you know, of course it wasn't true, but there are drugs there, even in the Soviet Union. But for my experience, it was like special, you know, some kind of people who involved with art and with criminals, actually. And it wasn't easy to get drugs at that time, of course. But then you get involved in such kind of companies, of course you can have it every time. And I really enjoyed to smoke with this company, and of course, and it's better, for me, just stopped on this drug of choice and don't do more. But my disease knew better, and just in several months I started use another drugs, and it was like, you know, never enough. I don't know why I didn't be scared about to try anything what somebody offered me. And I was like the person who attempted his hand for a first for the shot, like a first one. And of course, they kicked me out of the college, and you know, this fest, like like my life was like carnival. You know, the carnival started, and it was like every day, just some high, some drugs, and it was never enough. And for 10 years, it took for me 10 years, actually, to go to this such a state. Then I was totally desperate, emotionally and physically ruined, and with thoughts that I can't live with drugs or without drugs. Because, you know, in that time, from the beginning, it was very good. You know, I was young, attractive woman, and lots of men around. You know, I sell my body, I sell drugs, I stole stuff, sometimes rob flats, and all this, you know, all this stuff. And at the age of 27, I guess, exactly 87. I returned to my parents' house, and just with one thought, God, please give me a death. I can't live anymore. Because I hated people with whom I used, but I can't use because there is no around me, just normal people that time. I hated my parents, I blamed everybody for everything in my life, and I don't want to live. Didn't want to live. And at that time, my former drinker brought me to AA. He was an interpreter, and So he knows English and could communicate with Americans who brought that time the 12-step program to the Russia. It was 1992, and there is no NA that time in Russia, and he took me to AA. And I am very grateful, actually, to AA Fellowship, because they didn't kick me off, but actually they should, because I was so proud that I'm drug addict, you know? And this is alcoholics, who is this alcoholics, you know? I was with such a huge ego, oh, such a stupid, such a sick. But they didn't kick me off, they told me stay. And in several months, I met an American woman there in some AA meeting, and she called herself addict. And I almost clenched on her because she was a woman, and she called herself addict. She became my first sponsor, and in several months, we opened the first NA group in Moscow. And, you know, I was so blessed to be one of the first members of Moscow Fellowship. There are a few of us that that time, and, you know, we had no literature, we had no sponsor, because these Americans who helped us to open our first group, they lived, of course, but we stayed. And we didn't know actually anything about this program, about steps. We just stay together to be without drugs. What we can do more? We like have a very little community. We spent time together. We were friends. And it was a very good time, actually. I'm so missed this time. And we served a lot, because there are few of us, and we should serve, you know. Sometimes we sat together, just two of us, to have a meeting, and just telling by ourselves, like, okay, two of us, it's meeting two, it's okay, you know. And sometimes we were so angry that nobody needs this group, nobody comes. But with the next year, actually, it was the situation has changed and people started to come. First 3 years, it was very few of us, but after 3 years, people started to come. And you know, these 3 years we stayed clean, and I stayed clean because of service. We should serve, and it was like, you know, a business of our life to keep this meeting, to keep this place for newcomers. And you know, this is about the service, just to do your little stuff, just like we did that time, just sit in this place and hope that somebody will come sometimes. And we couldn't imagine that 20 years ago our fellowship will be such a huge, like thousands of us recovering addicts in Moscow, you know. And this is about the service. Just do you what you can do. Nothing else. And the result is in God's hand. I'm very, very grateful to this service because I stayed clean. It saved my life. actually, this service, to be one of the first member. And but unfortunately, my story is not so good. Unfortunately, I served a lot, actually, first 7 years in fellowship. But after seven years, our fellowship was big enough, but of course not like today, but there are some guys, very young, clever guys who came to our fellowship and they wanted to serve. And I told that I'm going to the pension, please keep service. And they did it so good that, it was joke, but it makes not very good thing in my life, you know. In our literature, we can see the sentences about the good time for addicts. That this is not very, this is dangerous to have good times for us. And my experience showed that this is true. Because after 7 years, I was like, I get married, I had a good job, I earned money, I traveled a lot. I was so blessed with all things. I had a good house, and everything was very good. And I started. I quit serving service in fellowship, and started with time participate less and less in meetings. And I didn't have sponsor that time. I didn't do steps that time. And what else can be? Can hold me in fellowship. My disease, my head, like turn off. Like, what I can get in this fellowship now? I am so, you know, I was like, you know, the first one with the biggest clean time, and I thought, why? What they can give me? They can give me nothing. Then I started thinking that. Not about what I can give to fellowship. I started think what the fellowship can give me. And I found it that it's okay. I'm clean, I'm recovered already, I will go to live my big life, you know. And I left the fellowship. My husband actually left his fellowship too, he's from A. And from the beginning, everything was good, actually. But with years, it was like 5 years around, a little bit more. With years, it started worse and worse and worse. From the beginning, I started not satisfied with my life, with my husband, with my job, with everything. The next like part was I started have some psychiatric statement, you know, like panic attacks, actually. And I thought, oh, I'm crazy, I need to do something, oh, I need to go to psychologist probably, because I'm crazy. I forgot that the main disease which I have, I forgot about it that time, completely forgot. I went to psychologist, I was in the church. And you know, as in our literature, we can find the words that some of us use psychiatry and religion, but none of them works for us. I forgot about it, you know? I tried hard, I really tried hard to control my life, to manage something. But I became worse and worse and worse, and finally, I understood that something wrong, that nothing works, no psychology, no religion, because I thought, oh, I have a contact with God, God will save me anyway, you know. But I became crazy, completely crazy. I couldn't, you know, even walk that time. But I had joke. It was like in such a control. Oh, such a terrible, terrible times. And I prayed a lot for God to show me the way how I can have a release, how I can, I don't know. I understood that the faith which I have to God actually doesn't work, and I understood that time why. Because, you know, the faith without action is dead faith, you know. And I prayed a lot that time to show me the way to serve. And actually I tried some charity, but it doesn't work for me. I don't know why. I started and quit with some children, with some, you know, because I had no children. And the God answered me finally, you know. And he answered in such a, you know, I understood that my loving God, my higher power, had a good humor. Because, you know, he answered me, he showed me that I should come back. And he showed me, I didn't want to, for him to show me in this way, because, you know, I was in France at that time, in some monastery. I spent a week in silence to pray. Can you imagine how bad I felt that time, that I just went to the monastery to pray a week in silence just to have an answer of will, of God's will, what I can do? Because I felt that time I had no friends. My husband, I felt something wrong, something going on. He didn't love me. That time I felt it, like he has some women or something like that, something going on. But I didn't even think that he could relapse. And he relapsed that time already, but I was in denial for a year. I didn't see it at all. It's unbelievable how disease can make me crazy. And then I prayed in this monastery and back, it was my vacation, and back to Moscow, and found it, my husband relapsed in our flat was crashed completely, stuff stolen, all just, you know, all this using stuff around it was just, another women's stuff. It was just such a disgusting, you know. It was a hell, really a hell. My father was paralyzed that time, and then I left for vacation. He was in stable stage, but then I came back and found it, my husband, in this ruined flat, and I need to go to my father's flat, to my parents' flat. My father was nearly to death. In 2 days, he died on my arms. I left my husband, stayed with my mom. I managed all these funerals, you know. And in the funeral, I understand that I so want to drink, just take this vodka, like big glass, and just drink it in one swallow, you know, because the tension was such a big inside, such a strong, that I thought that my mind will be just blown away, and I ran to the fellowship. I ran to the fellowship with this terrible hell inside me, this hell inside my mind. Because to whom I can go, to where people can understand what I can feel in this situation. Normal people will not understand this. Who can help me? Just you, you know? And this way I came back to the fellowship. I am really grateful, actually. My husband did the 12th step for me. Because that time I thought that everything can happen, but not this. It's not possible. He relapsed at 18 years of sobriety, because he was NA. 18 years, I thought that it's not possible. I have never seen him drunk, because I met him in the recovery center. He walked there already. And I come back to the fellowship, and I started as a newcomer. But, you know, my ego was such a sick at that time. From the beginning, it was like I was such in pain that I was screaming in each meeting that what happened to show people that it doesn't matter how long you stay clean, how long you stay without drugs. It doesn't matter at all, just one moment. For 1 year, my husband became like a pig. He couldn't control anything. He lost everything, family, job, health, everything. And in fellowship, in several months, I started felt myself so desperate, so lonely, so bad, actually. Because, you know, I was like such a big person, which have so many clean time, because I didn't relapse. But fellowship has changed already. I didn't know anybody there. Just old timers, which is few of us in fellowship. And then I sat on the meetings, and nobody inside, I thought, oh, everybody should admire me, you know, should know me, say, oh, God, that's such a crazy. But nobody knows me, nobody take attention on me, you know. And I was so just a little girl inside. Oh, so lonely, so desperate. And actually, the most old person in our fellowship. Our fellowship is very young, very beautiful, very young. And I started think what can help me, because it wasn't possible to stay in fellowship, I didn't want to leave again, because I know already what is this to live without fellowship, without the program. And the service helped me. I remember that, and I started with little service at my home group, like to make coffee, we make tea actually at the meetings. And I started make a tea as a newcomer, as an unknown person. And actually, with months, like miracle happens, I started make friends and feel needed and feel like I belong to fellowship. I belong to this, my meeting, my home meeting. And the guys with whom I served in my home group at that time is my close guys now in fellowship. So I'm grateful to this service too, to this service on my home group. So it's the second gratitude through service I've got. And what else I want to share? And my life in fellowship started again, you know. I've got sponsor, I started to do steps, I got a home group, I've got sponsees with time. Then I did my ninth step. I remember that 20 years ago, my first sponsor, American one, She didn't know the Russian reality very well, and she gave me a task of 9 steps, indirect compensation to society for my criminal stuff, for the breaking the law which I did, which all of it. To open the group in the prison, in the Russian prison. And I really tried from the beginning, 20 years ago, we tried to find a way in Russia to carry the message in the prison, but it wasn't possible at all. This time remember that I need to do this task, to open a group and in the prison. And I go to the H&I committee in our fellowship. Then I came back, they had no such kind of service in our H&I committee, I mean in prison, in the correctional facility. Mm. We have in Moscow, we had in Moscow that time service in hospitals. Because even now in Russia it's very difficult to go through this whole administration stuff, to go to carry the message in the correctional facility. They don't let us to go inside. Maybe this name like Narcotics Anonymous is scary them, I don't know. So they don't want us still, but it's a little bit changed now in Moscow, and probably we will open some jail like for temporary staying, not for convicted people, but before conviction. And but I stayed in hospital and institutions committee because they didn't have a secretary that time. Three years ago. That's okay. And I stayed just to help, to be a temporary secretary. But how come it longs already almost 3 years? I'm a secretary there, 2.5. And we open a group in the women prison, not in Moscow district, but in Orlov district. It's another city in Russia, 4 kilometers from Moscow. It's pretty far, actually. And the story, it's actually wonderful because I came back to the fellowship. I saw one girl. She was under the court that time, and she had like several months clean time. And she was under the court. They convicted her for 9 years for buying drugs for the somebody. But this somebody was a policeman, you know. They just hid this tricky stuff for her especially. And she got 9 years for buying drugs. And I was so sorry about her. And we have correspondence each other by post. Then she was in this correctional facility already in Orel. It's another city. And she carried the message. We pushed her to carry the message there because she could stay, because we could stay clean just to carry the message, just to take out what we have. And she stayed clean there, and now we have, and she asked to help her to organize a meeting there in this correctional facility. And now we have one. We have this meeting. You know. you know, sometimes I don't want to go there because it's very far. It's too difficult. It's too difficult to get there. 5 hours by car. It's pretty good, pretty hard way, and 5 hours back. But when we get there and saw these faces of these convicted women who is there on our meeting, and they opened, some of them, and we cried together. And you know, it's just unbelievable that some girls there, such a beautiful young girl, she's got 17 years old for drugs, 17. It's unbelievable, you know. And then I heard such kind of story there, I just such a grateful that I have this freedom from this active addiction. I'm so grateful that I have this new life. I have this incredible life and can be here with you. It's unbelievable. Yeah. These feelings service gives me this gratitude. Sorry. It's alarm. This gratitude service gives me, you know, and I want to share this piece because I have no time already. About you know, there is a parable about 10 lepers. I would like to share this. The lepers, it was in olden time, it was people who had this terrible disease on skin, you know, and they should live outside the society because of this incurable disease. And they should die in a special reservation. And actually, then they traveled. They should ring the bells to alarm people that the lepers coming, because people were so scared of them. They should avoid this place with lepers. And the story is that 10 lepers go through the road, go on the road on their way. And they met God. And they begged God, please and cure us. You see how suffer we are. And God told them, you're cured already. Just go your way. And they just, of course, were sad, but they go their way. And during and on the way, they realized that the disease come out from them, that they're cured. And they were very glad and go their own way, keep going their own way. And just one from them turned back, ran to God, fell on his knees and thanked God. And you know, for me, our service, my service in fellowship, it's returning to my higher power, my loving God, to say thank you. Because I, sorry. Because I really don't deserve this new life. Because what I did in my life, you know, how I deserve such kind of miracles. And you know, When I sit in our agent I committee, and you know, God bless you. You know, we have very big agent I committee, like 40 people, and we come together for the meeting twice a month to prepare our plan for doing to prepare our plan for next meeting for next month to do to open new hospitals, to share our problems and all this stuff. And I am a secretary of these meetings, so I need to write down all the minutes what people decided. And then I sat in this room. You should see this. You know, we have no a big room, but it's plenty enough. And 40 of us, like, and our fellowship, like most of men, just not a lot of women. Like 20% of Moscow fellowship, it's women, and 80% men. And in H and I committee, like three girls and others men. And you know, these men, like serious looking with big hands, with tattoos everywhere, you know, such good, beautiful looking. I see their faces, and you know, I see God's face. Because these men, these drug addicts who just a year ago lived on the street, used street drugs, doing all this terrible stuff, you know, they just sitting and discussing with such a serious who is going to this hospital, who is going to that hospital. We should save that brothers because they are in some infection hospital and they are dying from AIDS. And so on, they're fighting with each other, who is the first one to go. It's unbelievable, you know, because people can't change by themselves in such a tremendous way. They can't. It's really high power job. It's not really. So grateful to my higher power, and I am sure she or he spoke through me now, because my English, you know, I was so scared to be here and speak, because I thought that you will not understand me and I will not understand you at all, this, you know, crazy stuff every time. And right now I'm on the seventh step, and I see my fear. And the opposite is faith. And I asked God to give me faith, and I relaxed, you know. And I did it. Thank you very much. I'm so grateful to you. So grateful. Thank you.
Det er en dybere åbenhed vil vi beholde det, vi har, og ligesom den ægte frihed kommer til os selv, så det udspringer gruppens frihed af vores tradition. Så hvilken folk flytter os sammen, er stærkere end de der redsætter, så alt er godt. Først, hvor fælles selvfærd bør komme først, personlig bedring afhænger af en af et samme år. Anden, angående vores gruppes formål, er der kun én ultimativ autoritet, en kærlig Gud, som man måtte udtrykke sig i vores gruppe som vidtighed, hvor ledere og blot få tjenere, de bestemmer ikke. Tredje. Den eneste forudsætning for medlemskab er et ønske om at stoppe med at bruge. Fjerde. Hver gruppe skal være selvstyrende undtagen i sager, der berører andre grupper eller indad som vidtighed. Femte. Enhver gruppe har kun et hovedformål at bringe budskabet til den af der stadig lider. Sjette. En NA-gruppe bør aldrig anbefale, finansiere eller lægge navn til nogen som helst beslægtet facilitet eller udenforstående foretænding for problemer med penge, ejendom eller præcis ikke skal aflede os fra vores hovedformål. Syvende. Enhver NA-gruppe bør være fuldstændig selvforsynende og afslutte bidrag udefra. Ottende. Narkotikanonymous skal kun blive ikke professionel, men vores servicecenter kan beskæftige særlige arbejdskraft. 9. NA som sådan bør aldrig organiseres, men vi kan nedsætte serviceorganer eller kommentere, at der er ansvarlige over for den kritikken. 10. Narkotikanonymous har en holdning til udenforstående spørgsmål. NA sammen på det for aldrig en navs i offentlige kontroverser. Hvor forhold til offentligheden er baseret på tiltrækning frem for agitation, vi er nødt til at bevare personlig anonymitet, når det drejer sig om presse, radio og film. 12. Anonymitet er der omgivet grundlag for alle vores traditioner, som altid vender os om at sætte principper for personligheden. Forståelsen af disse traditioner kommer langsomt over en vis periode. Vi samler oplysninger, når vi snakker med medlemmer og besøger forskellige grupper. Som regel er det ikke før, vi bliver involveret i service, en eller anden forvejende eller personlig bedring afhænger af en af et sammenhold. Og dette sammenhold afhænger af, hvor godt vi følger vores tradition. En af et stort tradition er ikke til forhandling. De er retningslinjer, som holder vores fællesskab i live og uafhængig. Når vi følger disse retningslinjer på omgang med andre mennesker og samfundet i det hele taget, undgår vi mange problemer. Det betyder ikke, at vores tradition er fjernet af det. Vi må stadig se vanskeligheder i øjnene i forhold, som de opstår. Det er altså kommunikationsproblemer og meningsforskelle, interne kontroverser og problemer med enkelte personer og grupper uden for fællesskabet. Når vi alligevel anvender disse principper, undgår vi nogle af faldgrupperne. Mange af vores problemer, ligesom dem med forgænger, måtte se øjnene. Deres hårdtrukne erfaring affødte traditionerne, hvor egne erfaringer har vist, at disse principper gælder lige så meget i dag, som dengang de blev formuleret. Vores traditioner beskytter os mod indtagen og ekstremt af det, der kan udvære os. Det er i sandhed, at de godt vil tyde os sammen, og det er forståelse og anvendelse af de her. Det er meget godt.